All right, we're recording and we're live, and we're ready for the economic conundrum. So if you will, let's start talking about the two videos that you watched. You can take me to your notes page so that I can read as you talk. Let's get into it.
I'm getting my link right now.
Alrighty, I see Nemus. Okay, sorry I didn't do mine. Oh, come on, Abdullah. I'm sorry, man. Come on. I don't appreciate that. That's junk, man. I told you the stuff to do in our class. That's junk. That's just whack, man. Go do it now. Go do it now. I'm sorry. I can't move forward for you when you're gonna be leeching off folks. So go do it now. Just move. You still don't get out. You can log out of this class, but log into, go to the default channel, so I can come and check on with you from time to time. No, I said, great. All right. Safia, would you please give me your link?
I don't have a link to my notes. I did watch the video, but I didn't do a note page.
You didn't take any notes?
I didn't do a note page. Like, I have some data in the notebook, but I didn't put another page.
You mean you didn't type them? There's nowhere you can upload them?
No, they're written in my notebook.
Okay, what I want you to do right now is I want you to type them up, okay, while I talk to Nima. Type them on the wiki page, please. All right. Nima, let's start with money as debt. So let me just hear. I'm looking on the at your notes. So tell me what's your reaction, what you learned that you didn't know, and or what question do you have? I'll type that in the text chat. Keep going. I have to take my mic off of push to talk.
Okay. I thought the video itself wasn't interesting, but the information was. I didn't know hardly any of it, so.
I don't have any questions though.
All right, so what? Tell me something that you thought was significant about this.
That banks can just have money made for them whenever they owe money to somebody.
So what do you think about that? Do you think that's a good thing? You think it's a bad thing? You think you have any opinion about it?
It's a bad thing.
Why?
Because they aren't responsible for paying off their debt the way everyone else is, and they can get money made for them.
Okay. What's the fractional reserve? Very good, incidentally. What's the fractional reserve? What is that?
They're the limits that are placed on the creation of new money.
Yes and no. So what are those limits on the creation of new money? Because that's not exactly the fractional reserve. You know, it serves that purpose, but that's not the main purpose. What is a fractional reserve? What is it?
I don't know any other definition besides the one I just gave.
What is it? How does it function then?
I thought my understanding of it was just a rule that they couldn't create more than a certain amount of money.
All right, try this on. You, me, and Safiya want to start a bank. You put in $2 million, I put in $2 million, Safiya puts in $2 million. We got $6 million. We put in a charter for a bank, they approve the charter, so now we got a bank and we have $6 million in reserves. So so now how much money can we loan out to people?
$6 million.
All right, that's the normal process and that's the normal thinking. Except for the fractional reserve says I only have to have a fraction of the money on reserve. So, do you remember any of the ratios for the fractional reserves in the movie?
I think it was it 2 to 1? I'm not really sure.
Okay, you want to put a note there because you want to go back and deal with that one. Try. Let's start at 9 to 1. Let's start there. So if the fractional reserves are 9 to 1 and we have $6 million between the three of us, then that means how much can we loan out?
54 million.
Okay, how'd you get that?
9 to 6.
Okay. So now we can loan out $54 million. Okay. So in a sense, you're right. It just provides some restrictions, but so now you, me, and Safiya, who has $6 million, we're going to loan out and gain interest on $54 million. Okay. At 10% interest, how much money are we getting coming back?
You mean 10% interest of $64 million?
On the $54 million. What I say is it 54? Excuse me. 9 times. Yeah, it's we're talking about 6 times 9. 54, right? So we lend out $54 million, and what's 10% interest?
Would it be $540 million?
Well, it'd be $540 million off of $54 million, 10%.
$5,400,000.
Wait, that's it. 5.4 million. Now, how much do we start with out of our pockets?
$6 million.
So, because of the fractional reserves, we can lend 9 times more than we have. And so, let's say we do that and would lend that, and within a year, we've gotten that paid back. So, we've got almost our $6 million already back. Now, suppose those fractional reserves, and what I want you to do, since you see now how it works, I want you to pay attention to the video to what were the numbers, the actual numbers of fractions. Were they 9 to 1? Were they 7 to 1? Were they 30 to 1? I can tell you they were in 9 to 1 or better. That's the fractional reserve system, okay? And that's kind of risky. Because, like, you think the bank can lend out what it has on reserves, either what they have started with or what other people deposit in their savings. But let's say we have $6 million, and then we get $6 million of depositors putting their savings with us. Now we have $12 million, okay, on reserve, and we now can do 9 times that much. So now, instead of $54 million, we can do $108 million. But now, if everybody calls the money in at the same time, we're in trouble because we don't have money to cover it. Do you understand now the fractional reserve? So a fraction of what you have on reserve. Okay. Now, what's I'm looking at your notes, tell me any of this. I mean, do you understand all of this? And you said you don't have a question, so I assume you understand it. Okay.
Yes, I do.
All right. Now I want you to dig a little deeper, because, for example, under banking systems, you see you have under that bullet, banks can't create 9 times the money they loan, 1/9 of the money they receive. Okay. Now, that's the fractional reserve. So that you have it there is one thing. I want you to be able to really understand how it really rolls. Okay? What do they mean by 95% of all money in existence today is created by loans?
Meaning that all 95% of money that people have, they are basically borrowing?
Well, no, it doesn't just mean that. It also means that the money that's created in the money system is based on loans. They actually may pay those loans back. So let's say you go down to the bank and you borrow $100,000, and let's say you start your business and you pay it back within a year. Is that $100,000 you pay back still in circulation?
Yes.
But it was created by loans. So it doesn't necessarily mean that 95% of the money that you have is based on a loan, because you paid it back. Do you understand?
Yes.
So, but that money now is still in existence. It was created by loans. But now I thought that when money was created, the government created the money and went to the Mint, U.S. Mint, and created the money. Is that not how it works?
No.
Well, how does it work? Based on what you learned, tell me, how does it work?
The banks, the banks borrow it. They don't get it, like, it does technically get created in factories, but for actual use, they just get it for them to use as loans to loan out to people. Like, it's not a fair system where they just make money and hand it out to people who need it. They just give it to the banks, and the banks use it for whatever they need it for.
Okay. Let's keep on going down. Does it have to be done this way? What are some other ways to do it?
From what I watched, it said that if there was no debt, then there wouldn't be any money, right?
Well, that according to this system, but there are plenty of other ways to do it. Because this system is a system based on debt. But that's not the only way to do it. What's the... you have, in 1957, the total American debt was $5 trillion. In 2006, it's $45 trillion. What's the America? What's the debt, national debt right now? Let's look it up. What's the national debt?
$11.9 trillion.
Okay, really? Let's see about that. And then see if you can find the total American debt.
14 trillion.
Okay, we gotta look at that. That's strange that the debt would be down in terms of total American debt. Let's look at. Are you on the debt calculator?
Mine says debt clock.
Okay, right, debt clock. Okay, and if you hover over, when you move over one of the things, one of the clocks, it up at the top, it gives a little bit more information. So we're going to be here from time to time, so make sure you bookmark this page so that we begin to look at the total U.S. debt. Do you see where it says $55,619,446,100,000, and then it's moving too fast. Do you see where it says total U.S. debt?
Yes.
So we want to kind of get clear, like there's the U.S. debt. Okay, the U.S. total interest 2011. Okay, the total debt per citizen, okay, total debt per family. Look at that total debt per family, 681. Whenever a nation goes in debt, who is responsible for paying that debt?
The citizens.
That's right. So if Haiti borrows money as a nation to help itself deal with the earthquake, then it pays back. So it taxes its citizens, okay, at a higher rate than it normally would. And, you know, so let's say 50% of every dollar that a Haitian citizen make may go to pay back a debt. Well, that's similar to what how much of your income goes to pay back a debt. Now, right now, and some of you, thank you, I got the link. So both of you, how much is the basic tax rate for every American? The basic tax rate.
Was it 8%, I think?
No, it starts out like a 33%. So that means a third of every dollar that you make is destined for taxes. Now, you have good tax preparers and other folks to reduce that amount. But if you don't, then what most people pay is between 33% and 50%. So how'd you like working and every day half of what you made went to Uncle Sam? Some is debt to pay off debt. Some is to pay off services that you may receive. Okay. Are you with me, Safia? Are you at the debt calculator?
No, I don't think I see that link.
Great, Alma's put it there.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to give you a link to a quiz that was created by another student when we were first doing this. Safia, you might remember Jerome, his group. Click on the link. Let's see if we can, after having watched this, if we can answer this. Put your answers in the text chat and let's talk about them. 1 through 12. Okay, Nima, start firing up the text chat with your answer. Put the number behind it, like number 1, number 2. Let's just go through 1 through 5 right now and then we'll talk about it. All right. All right, so are y'all on the same page here, or any differences or contention? Are y'all in agreement here?
All of our answers are pretty much the same.
You got money is produced by the mint? That's not true. Well, that is true. Some money is produced by the mint and the government. You're all right, and then some money, most money is created by the government. Ah, it was based on gold. When was it based on gold, and when did it stop being based on gold?
I don't remember when it stopped, but I remember in some of the things we did last year saying that money, like, it was a receipt. So it was backed by gold and other forms like gold and silver and stuff. I don't remember when it stopped, though.
So great. Now, in the video, you remember it showed you that in that little video, in the cartoon, people put their gold and the person gave them a receipt, which was the money. And they passed the receipts. Yeah, that was based on the gold standard. Okay. Now, then the money stopped being based on a gold standard. And now does money... Does it have to be based on a gold standard to be valuable? Or is it better to be based on a gold standard to be valuable? This is a very, very good question, okay? Because it really goes at the heart of what you'll be also dealing with as we deal with the secret of Oz. Now, and last time we taught this class, the students toward the end said they wanted for us to produce our own currency, okay? And that we could produce our own currency in the black community. And so would that be based on a gold standard in order for it to be effective and useful Safi, you said it has to be backed by something. So we'd have to have a goal in order to create an economic system of our own currency.
Well, no, not gold, but it has to be backed by something other than the word that is valuable. Because, like, at least with the gold system, you understood, like, it was a receipt. It actually stood for something. Now money can be counterfeited. Now it doesn't hold as much water. It's like we all just believe that money is what it was, and we go along with that. But if we were to have, like, our own system, it would have to, I mean, I think there has to be something more than just words.
Okay, well, you studied systems that existed in Ithaca, New York, not far from where you used to live. Was that system that where people can now go into credit unions and over 700 businesses, is their money backed by a gold standard? So that means it's worthless. Then how, you said it got to be backed by something.
But I mean, one, there's a small, and two, like, it's a town. So it's small and it's that, like, they use it bartering.
Like, no, they don't. They use it for money. They don't use it for barter.
They don't only use that for money. So what I'm saying is, like, it can't stand on its own. Like, they have certain places that accept it, certain places that don't. Like, it's not, it couldn't be as large of a currency as an American dollar.
Why not?
Without being backed by something other than just words.
That's not true. What limits it? What limits the whole, from it growing through the whole town? They say, you come to our town, you got to change your American dollars into Ithaca hours or Ithaca bucks. You see, money is an agreement between people. Nothing more, nothing less. Okay? Why did they change their currency? Well, because... and Nima, I'll send you that video because it's important for you to look at that. During tough economic times for this town in Ithaca, New York, some white people got together and decided that they wanted to create their own currency because they still had skills and they still had needs and still could provide services and goods to each other. They just didn't have the greenback currency, the dollar, floating in the community. And that's what happens when you have hard economic time. Incidentally, many communities created their own currency during the Depression of 32. Okay, and so that's why they created their own currency, because they wanted to be able to exchange goods and services with each other, because they had the goods, needs, services, and skills. They just didn't have the money, the greenback. It used to be cowrie shells. See, there are countries in Africa where cowrie shells that were plentiful, not scarce, Safia, not scarce like gold was supposed to be scarce, which actually is not true. Diamonds are not scarce either. It's just an illusion. But anyway, they took something common like cowrie shells, and they made that the unit of currency. So how do you do that? You remember I said part of what we'll be focusing on, I mean, while we're talking about money, we're going to be focusing on the social aspect, okay? The question is, how do you assure yourself, or how does a nation or a group assure itself that the people will honor the currency? That is the only question, not what it's backed by. There were people who, in this country, I'm talking about mainly predominantly white people at this point, who fought the gold standard. And there were other people who fought for the gold standard. Now, you got bankers and people. which ones you think fought for the gold standard and which one you thought fought against the gold standard? Would you just guess? All right, Nima, guess. What about you, Safia? Hey, take a guess. You got 10 seconds. 9.
Wait, I'm confused as to what the question is.
Okay. The question is, in the history of this country, there's been an ongoing fight, I'm talking of America, and a struggle. And some people have fought for a gold standard, and some people have fought against a gold standard. Now, those are the two options, gold standard or not. The two groups of people are the people and the banks. Which ones do you think was on what side? Do you think the people fought for the gold standard and the banks fought for not? Or you think the banks fought for the gold standard and the people said no? Okay? So, Nima, why would you think that the banks fought for the gold standard, against it? And, Safia, why do you think the banks fought for it?
I think the banks fought against it because without the gold standard, or without the notion that money has to be backed by something, they can end up making more money and using it more freely than if they had to follow the rule of having to have gold to back their money up by, and they could loan money more easily if they didn't have to back it up with anything. And people probably wanted to back it up with gold because they wanted it to be more of a fair system.
All right, Safia, what do you say?
I think the banks chose the gold measure just because when I'm looking at it now, how much they prosper due to debt, and a lot of people didn't have gold, so they would have to, take out loans and do all of those other things.
Wow, I'm just talking up a storm. I'm just talking up a storm without pushing this talk down button. Gee whiz, forgive me, y'all. Okay. Wow. When the banks of Europe controlled the currency of the colonists when they came here, of course they were British subjects and French subjects and Spanish subjects and Dutch subjects, and they came to invade this country and take it over, which they did, and it became a colony or satellite of the British and French and other systems. Well, the British then fought and beat out the Spanish and the French, and so it became dominant among the colonists in terms of the colonies. And the colonists created their own currency called the Continental Currency. And the British didn't like that. They wanted to continue to create their currency, to use the currency as dictated by the bankers in England. And that's what the Revolutionary War, the American Revolutionary War, was fought about. That's what they fought about. Now, Africans fought at the American Revolutionary War for our freedom from the white folks that were here, as well as the white folks in Britain. And so the issue of who controls the currency and whether the currency is backed by gold or what's the particular standard is one that goes at the heart of the founding of America for white folks. Okay, and so it's important for you to know. Now, some people argued that the gold standard, what the English folks wanted, it was a problem because it meant those who, as Safi said, had the gold were those who were in charge. And those who didn't, weren't. Other folks says, no, it's best not to have a gold standard. Let's have the agreement standard, where the government backs a person who has it. People believe in it because they have faith that if they have $10 in currency, then it will buy $10 worth of service from the other citizen. Incidentally, counterfeit happens regardless whether they're gold or not. I know that the economy, money as debt, supports the gold standard. And there are many other truisms in there, regardless of whether you're for or against the gold standard. But so we're going to study those. I want you to bring the term into your vocabulary that you see in the wiki page right there called fiat money. All right. How about read that out loud, Safia?
Fiat money is money that has value only because the government regulations or law. The term derives from the Latin fiat, meaning let it be done. As such, money is established by a government decree. Their fiat money is used as currency. The term fiat currency is used. Today, most national currencies are fiat money, including the U.S. dollar, the euro, and all other reserve currencies, and have been since the Nixon shock of 1970.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about, you know, fiat money. Let me put that in your vocabulary because you'll hear it and see it again. And so let's think about this. Do you think there was currency in 13th century? Well, let's go back that. Do you think 3000 BCE that Africans in Kemet and Nubia had currency?
Yes.
Well, why would you think that? As opposed to that we just bartered everything.
Well, I would think that the concept of currency or money had to come from somewhere, and if it came from anywhere, it probably came from Africa.
Okay, that's a good guess. Let's see if we can back some of that up. What do you think, Safia? All right. So, was our currency, do you think, and we may have to put these questions out, so we may do some research, we may think about them, was our currency based on the gold standard? How many of you know of Mansa Musa? You ever heard of the name Mansa Musa? Did you see this link? Have you found anything? Did y'all hear me say, look up Mansa Musa? Or was I talking to myself again?
I didn't hear you tell us to look it up.
Well, I got to go back to the push to talk. Give me a break. All right, as I remember. Okay. What I wanted you to do was to look it up. I'm sorry, I've been here all the time. I have to get back used to it, into the groove. As we deal with the gold standard, we deal with our money. I wanted you to look up from Kemet. Let's look up this question of this person, the Mansa Musa. And here's one link. And when you click on it, go down to Islam and pilgrimage to Mecca. Okay. Read this, Nima. That section that says Islam and pilgrimage to Mecca. Let's see what money implications we see here.
Musa was a devout Muslim, and his pilgrimage to Mecca, a command ordained by Allah according to the core teachings of Islam, made him well known across northern Africa and the Middle East. He believed the religion of Islam to be deep and certainly more than repetition of Quranic verses and prayer. To Musa, Islam was the foundation of the cultured world of the Eastern Mediterranean. He would spend much time fostering the growth of Islam.
Okay, we're getting feedback. Hold on. All right, try it again.
You want me to start from the beginning?
No, just start from where you stopped.
Musa made his pilgrimage in 1324. His procession reported to include 60,000 men, 12,000 captives, herald dressed in silks who wore gold staffs, organized horses, and handled bags. Musa provided all necessities for the procession, feeding the entire company of men and animals. Also in the train were 80 camels, which varying reports claim carried 300 pounds of gold. Musa not only gave to the cities he passed on the way to Mecca, including Cairo and Medina, but also traded gold for souvenirs. Furthermore, it has been recorded that he built a mosque each and every Friday. Musa's journey was documented by several eyewitnesses along his route who were in awe of his wealth and extensive procession, and records exist in a variety of sources, including journals, oral accounts, and histories. Musa is known to have visited with the Mamluk Sultan al-Nasir Muhammad of Egypt in July of 1324. Musa's generous actions, however, inadvertently devastated the economy of the region. In the cities of Cairo, Medina, and Mecca, the sudden influx of gold devalued the metal for the next decade. Prices on goods and wares superinflated in an attempt to adjust to the newfound wealth that was spreading throughout local populations. To rectify the gold market, Musa borrowed all the gold he could carry from moneylenders in Cairo at high interest. This is the only time recorded in history that one man directly controlled the price of gold in the Mediterranean.
Okay. So first, you get to know a little of this African story, and you want to keep this in mind. But also, we're looking here at the action. So Musa, you know, from Mali, brings all this gold, and being generous, just gives it away. But instead of it then making people richer, it created a problem. How could that be, Safia? You didn't hear what? Oh, okay, you didn't hear the other thing. How could that be that a person bringing gold and giving it to people, since gold is the valuable thing, then why would that create a problem?
Because it spread value.
So now then, are the prices and everything based on the gold, or are they based on some other controls? Because if you just say, all right, if you got gold, then gold is what's valuable, and so if somebody comes and gives it to you, then great, and you still selling your car for, you know, 14,000, well, that's two pieces of gold, your camel for two pieces of gold. I now got, yeah, give me two pieces of gold for that camel, give me two pieces of gold for another camel, two pieces of gold for another camel. Why should you care? Because you got six pieces of gold. What's the problem? Why did prices, so-called, have to inflate? Why was the economy devastated? If gold is the standard, and here is a man bringing the gold and giving it to the people, what's the problem? So this helps you see that it's a little deeper than the gold standard, right? All right. You see, you're talking about who controls what, okay, and who's going to control what prices, because there's absolutely no reason for prices to go up. If you say, okay, great, then a whole lot of people rich, then what's the problem? I still got my gold for my two camels, just that it came from Mali. All right. Now, so just keep this in mind, because we'll go back to it, and I want you to know about Mansa Musa, also the whole notion that Africa being poor and impoverished and all that stuff that we see today. You know, I want you to also have a different image of Africa in your mind. The one that we have now is a result of European domination for centuries. That's not the Africa of our own origin and of our own making. I want us to... Wow. Okay, we're in good shape. Okay, for this. I want you to look at, let's go back to those questions that we had, that our classmates of yesteryear put. We went through five. What is money created from? Does the bank only loan money that they have? Of course, the answer is no. What is the physical value? What physical value is present? Now, some of you said your own signature. That's not a physical value. Okay? There is no physical value present. Okay? No money, no gold, nothing being put up on the other side. Okay? No promise to do anything. As a matter of fact, Mama Fia will show you when you get as you go toward getting your house and you sign the note, the promise to pay, nobody else signs but you. Typically, if we make an agreement or a contract, I sign it and Safia signs it. I sign it and Nima signs it. Here, I sign it and nobody else signs it. You get to more of that. Okay. All right. Number four, is there any value behind money? And now, this is one that we're going to be dealing with throughout the class, because the way it is now, the answer is, is yes or no. The way money can be valued, if we agree in a nation that we're going to honor dollars, and every time there's a dollar, it's worth an hour's work, or let's say a currency like Ithaca hours. which is why they you chose ours. And they said it's $10. So every time I got a dollar, it's worth ten. It's worth an hour of work. And everybody in the country agreed to that. And it was just as, you know, illegal to print counterfeit money as it is now. You go to jail. Okay. Incidentally, having a gold standard doesn't prevent people from doing counterfeit money. As long as you're using dollars that can be counterfeit or gold that can be counterfeit for that matter, that won't stop that. Okay. All right. Let's just go on to number five. So we're going to number three, four, we're going to hang with. What is the value behind money, and how is how do you establish value behind money? And this is critical and important, because if we're going to create our own currency, we're going to need to know how do you create, establish, and protect and maintain sovereign value behind money. And if African people choose to have value behind money be something that we don't have a lot of, we got a problem, don't you think? So if gold became our standard for our currency, then could we do that very well? Would our currency be worth much? What do you think, Safia? Neva says no. Because we don't have much of it. Why have your currency be based on something you don't have much of? Hello? That other people have more of and control. Okay? Now, what they don't control is our relationships and agreements with each other. If I do something for Neva, and she, in exchange, gives me 20 Garvey bucks. And I know that Safia will honor those Garvey bucks. Because Safia also knows that Abdullah will honor those Garvey bucks. And in the end, the government, wherever government we have, will take in those Garvey, will honor those Garvey bucks. Then, while we have no gold standard, we have an agreement. And when you restudy some of those, there are many, there are over 40 communities that have their own currency existing right now, okay, in the U.S. and Canada alone. But this question of is there value behind money and how do you put value behind money is going to be critical for us in this class, okay, because this is the social part of it. We think money is just dollars and numbers. It's actually our word, our agreements, and how do we force that? All right, number five, what would our economic system do if there was no debt? And the way the American economic system is it would crash, okay? Number six, what was money based on in the past? Y'all answer that. Of course, everybody know, what was that? Now, your normal answer would be gold. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, now, here's where it's important to have an African-centered perspective. And where, as much as I like money as debt, there's some myths. When they say what was money based on the past, who are they talking about? Whose money? Not money, everything money, not everybody's money. Okay? Now, I don't mean it's not true within the confines of who they're talking about, but when you make a statement like this, it's almost, it's called like universal. Like money, all money in the past was based on what? So whose money were they talking about when they asked that question?
Europeans.
That's right. Well, they were certainly weren't asking about Native Americans' money. Okay. You know, they weren't asking about the Incas. They weren't asking about the Taínos. Okay. They weren't asking about the Iroquois and the Iroquois Federation. Okay, so when you have an African-centered perspective, I'm going to put it in the text chat. It's called Universalism, the Syntax of Oppression. And I want you to be able to identify that, okay, and develop a keen eye for a question like that. What was money based on, okay, or making a statement about this mankind is a dog-eat-dog, or this is a dog-eat-dog world, or that's the nature of man. Now, when a person is talking about a particular cultural group or national group or ethnic group, then it may be true. It might be true of all mankind, but it don't, just because somebody says that's the nature of man or that's the nature of human beings, okay, doesn't mean it's true for everybody and every group. Are y'all with me on that? This statement that you see that I've chat, the statement that I put in the text chat, comes from Mama Marimba Ani's book, Yurugu. There is a chapter called Universalism, the Syntax of Oppression. Okay, what is syntax? Look it up real quick. Give me 30 seconds. What's syntax?
Okay. The branch of modern logic that studies the various kinds of signs that occur in a system and possible arrangements of those signs. Complete abstraction being made of the meaning of the signs.
Okay, Nima, thank you. What'd you get, Safia?
It's loading.
Okay, you're going to clean off some of that hard drive space, sister. You, last time I checked, you were like, when you told me how little you had, that'll make your system run slower than it needs to. When your disk is full, your disk you want to keep it about, but forget that. Just go and tell me what you got.
It says the study of the rules whereby words or other elements of sentence structure are combined to form grammatical sentences.
Okay, great. So this is about grammar and meaning and whatever, okay? And so she's saying this notion of universalism, okay, is a tool, a verbal grammatical tool of oppression by which Europeans will often say what is true about them and what is true about their culture, or what may be true about them and their culture. They'll say it as if it's true about everybody, as if their culture is universal. Like, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Well, actually, most native people before European domination don't operate on that principle, okay, that it's a dog-eat-dog world, okay? That mankind is innately evil. Notice mankind. I want you to start paying attention to mankind, humankind, all those statements like that, which tend to have you think universal, when in fact the person is talking about their culture and their group. And it may be true about their group, okay, or may not be, but clearly they don't have authority to speak as if this for every other racial, ethnic, cultural, national group on earth. All right? And so some of the keywords are like that, but also stuff like what was money based on. Okay, it takes a keen eye, okay, for you to see that. But I want you as an IA Education Institute student will need to see it from that way. And that is what we're talking about, being able to look at things from an African perspective and being aware of oppression when it exists in its subtle forms, when it may not even be intended by the author at the time. Okay? All right. Question 7. How much money do the banks make? Okay. Let's go back to that fractional reserve example. You remember that 9-to-1? So a bank can lend 9-to-1 in terms of its reserves, right? So we had our $6 million, and that meant we could lend $54 million. So we lend $54 million to Abdullah because he wants to build a new sports arena, state-of-the-art sports arena, okay? And he got to have his team, so he got to have some payroll. So we lend him $54 million, okay? Now, he goes to put that in his bank. So he puts that $54 million in his bank. That $54 million bank also had people who just had $6 million in reserves. But now how much money does that bank have on deposit? After Abdullah deposits the $54 million that we loaned him.
What is the ratio that we're using? Are we using the 9-to-1?
Okay.
Wait, so keep
going.
So you said he took out a loan for 54,000 or 54 million?
$54 million. Remember, we had, the three of us started a bank. We had $6 million. But using the fractional reserve, we could lend up to $54 million plus interest. And at 10%, we got $5.4 million back in our first transaction or first year whenever we sent that out, lend out that $54 million. So we lend it to Abdullah. He's upstanding. He's a great idea. He used to be a wonderful basketball player. He wants to own a team, blah, blah, blah. He takes that $54 million and puts it in his bank. So now how much do they have on reserve? If they also started with $6 million just like we had. You working there, Savia? That's it. Except for it goes down by one. So they can do 54 million times 8. Now, and what's 54 million times 8? Okay, so now this 432 million, okay, they can lend out. So this other bank who only has 6 million, just like we had 6 million, now can earn interest on 432 million. Y'all with me on this? Okay. Now, they lend 432 million and they take that and some of that comes back to our bank. Because there's a Nima and Safiya, you know, no, Nima's and Safiya's cousin, okay? They want to, you know, create a Black Star Ocean liner to fulfill the dream of Marcus Garvey. And so they borrow $432 million. They happen to bank at our bank, because it is Nima's and Safiya's cousin. And then they put that $432 million in our bank. Now, you can do that times 7. Are y'all with me? Safiya, you with me? Okay. All right. Now, do you see how that goes? And in the video, I want y'all to go back so that you can see how far can they go down. And so you see how somebody, and this is so important, because often we think people work hard. People are so smart. Okay. That's how they get to be so much richer than us. Okay, and have so much money. When in fact, if you are in, your brother is in government, or you get him in government, and he passed the laws that says you can have this fractional reserve, you don't have to have his own reserves anymore. They changed that law so that you don't have to have lend out only 6 million, or only twice as much as you have. You can lend out 9 times as much as you have on reserves. If you get someone to change the laws or that benefits your business, now money can be had. And it's not about smarts, you know. In this case, it's about power, because you have the political control to change the law so that you're going to be operating this fashion, irrespective of the impact it'll have on the economy or the social life of people. Okay. All right. Now let's go on to back to the question. So that was just to give a sense of how much money do the banks make. Whew. All right, number 8, governments place an additional statutory limit on the creation of new money by enforcing rules known as what? That's number 8. Anybody got an answer to that?
Fractional reserve requirements.
Okay, we see how limited those are, but okay, let's see. Number 9, is the money more powerful than the law? All right, what's your question, Safiya?
I want to say no, that money isn't more powerful than the law, but I'm not confident on that.
Great, we'll get confident as we go. I really like the way you said that. All right, number 11. What did Woodrow Wilson say about the government and the people in commerce? First, who is Woodrow Wilson? Who is Woodrow Wilson?
I don't remember.
Look it up right quick. Come on, fast, fast, fast. Look it up. You can do that in 15 seconds.
The president, Woodrow Wilson?
Yep, that's the one they're talking about. Which president? Barack Obama is the... I'm sorry, go ahead, Safiya.
He was the 28th president.
28th president. And Barack Obama is the what president? 44th. Okay, so the 28th president was Woodrow Wilson. And what did he say about government, people, and commerce? It was in the video. All right, don't know? All right, just go back and review that. Also, number 12, how is bank credit created? How is bank credit created? All right, now that's one group. We broke the class into two, and that was group. Safiya, were you a part of that group? Were you part of Jerome's group in generating these questions, or are you a part of the group with Nima? I mean, with Mira. Oh, okay. So you're part of the other group, right?
Yes.
Well, then let's look at your questions for guidance. See, this is what I love about this wonderful student work.
Professor, did you say what Wilson in the video?
Did I say what? Come again, please.
What Woodrow Wilson said in the video?
Nah, I didn't say that. I said I wanted you to go back and watch the video so that you have it down pat. Okay. Also, any of these questions that we're asking that you're not clear about, that's what you're going to review, and that's what your notes will be, and you will create a quiz as well. Not you individually. I think as a group, probably everybody will create another quiz. But this quiz is also going to partly be about money as debt, but also it's going to be about some of the other things. We're expanding it here. Okay, here are another set of questions created by, let me see, there's Jasmine Goldme, there's Akila Shakir, there's Ife Malik now on this team, okay? And some of the questions are the same, okay? Why did people start using paper receipt instead of actual barter? And now, again, why did people? What people? So it's going to be important to know, because is the reason that you'd come up with the same reason for everyone? It may be, but it may not be. So what's the answer to question number two? According to this video. According to Money is Debt and the people that they were referring to, why did people start using money, cash, I mean paper, as a form of exchange?
Okay. I think it was because they didn't trust the banker, so they had him just give them the receipt for it. I don't remember exactly.
What do you remember, Safia?
From what I remember, it was partially a tactic to protect their money. So that it was why people wouldn't carry around like gold or whatever. They wanted like something else that was kind of like lighter, I think.
Okay. Right, it wasn't, the issue of the paper money was not about trust, though it could have been, it should have been. It really was about the convenience. Once you had the receipts, of course, and that was important, the receipts, then I have a receipt, and it says that Safia is holding $100,000 of gold, and I got 10 receipts, so each one of those 10 receipts is worth that. So now I can change those, and so that's how that group. But now, if you go back to our link on fiat money, okay, again, because this is why it's important. You go to Aya, so you can't just take one thing. If you go down to the history, okay, the section that says history, you'll find something that says, historically, money originated as commodity money based on physical commodities such as cowrie shells, copper, gold, or silver. But fiat money is based solely on faith in the government issuing the money. Now, this is, are y'all with me right there?
I don't see it.
Okay, on that link, go down to the section that says history. There's a link, not a link, there's a section. First, the big section is fiat money, next characteristics, and next history.
Okay.
All right, now, just a couple things to note. I'm putting this in the text chat here. That according to Wikipedia, and notice, you'll hear me say according to, and this is going to be important for you to start to say, as if sometimes when you don't know it for a fact, you're referring to the source. Money originated as commodity money, based on physical commodities. Wow, okay, like cowrie shells. That's interesting, particularly since it was plentiful. Copper, gold, and silver, and fiat money is based solely on faith in the government issuing the money. Now, the government is, see, here's a bias in this, embedded in this, okay? To say based solely is to actually have it be where you actually doubt it or you bring it down. It could say, but fiat money is based on faith in the government issuing the money. Or it also could say, since the government is the people, in a real sense, when it's operating, not an oppressive kind of situation, you know, if we started our own town, no matter how small, how big, we are the government. We come together every Friday and decide what's going to happen and what's not going to happen. So we are the government. Okay, so if it's fiat money, is that is money that's based on our agreement Okay? I just want you to be able to balance some of it and catch some of the bias here. I don't care which way you go, whether you say gold standard is good or not. You also need to know, be able to know the bias, okay, there. Now here, the next piece, early history. According to this source, the Song Dynasty in China was the first to issue paper money, okay, in 10th century A.D. Well, of course, they weren't the first to have money, because we've been having money and doing exchanges. You don't build the pyramids and pay workers, you know, the hundreds of thousands of workers on it to build the pyramids, you know, with no money. Folk got to eat, okay? And the whole system of taxation came out of ancient Kemet. The whole, you also know from Brother Balagoon, the 3-4-5 pyramid, later called the Pythagorean theory, okay, was used as a way to measure land, and people were taxed based on their land, and that provided money to the government to build things. So clearly we had a bold, you know, economy, and certainly Mansa Musa had an economy, all right. So it's just important that when you say the first to issue paper money, that you also don't act like or believe that's the first to have money, or whether that was the best. Just because we use paper money now doesn't necessarily mean it was the best thing then or now. But so do you see what I'm trying to do here? I wanted to make sure that I'm watching out for the way subtle white supremacy can come in. Okay. But anyway, now the Song Dynasty in China, 10th century A.D. Okay, which would be about 900, right? 10th century A.D. would be like the 900s, 985, 950.
Yes.
Alright, so then there were these notes, but interestingly, although notes were valued at a certain exchange rate for gold, silver, or silk, conversion was never allowed in practice. The notes were initially to be redeemed after 3 years' service to be replaced by new notes for a 3% service charge, but as more of them were printed without notes being retired, inflation became evident. The government made several attempts to support the paper by demanding taxes, partly in currency, and making other laws. But the damage had been done, and the notes fell out of favor. Okay. The successive Yuan Dynasty was the first dynasty in China to use paper currency as the predominant circulating medium. The founder of the Yuan Dynasty, Kublai Khan, issued paper money known as Chao in his reign. The original notes during the Yuan Dynasty were restricted in areas and duration as the Song Dynasty. However, in the latter course of the dynasty, facing massive shortages of species to fund their ruling in China, the Yuan Dynasty began printing paper money without restrictions on duration. This eventually called hyperinflation. Now, part of what we're going to do in this class is understand this thing of why stuff is inflated and why it's not. Okay. And in 1455, in an effort to rein in economic expansion and end hyperinflation, the new Ming Dynasty ended the use of paper money. Okay, so clearly, everybody didn't go to using paper money for the same reason that, not necessarily the same reason that those in the story Money is Debt did. Right?
Yes.
I see you're an IA student, so you're being aware. You've got a sense of the timeline of history, and so nothing is just automatic for everybody. Okay, let's now go back to that. You know, the links are here in the text chat, so you just keep up with them or review them. And I'm also going to make sure that you have the audio for this. We're back to the questions. On Akila Shakir's page, what are fractional reserve requirements? That's something that you need to know. Not just what the fractional reserve is. Okay, number 4 and 5. What is the ratio of fractional money to real money in the bank? I'm thinking of 12 of 30. Thank you for reminding me, Nima. So here's what I want you to do. I'll look at your Nima. Thank you. I certainly enjoyed looking at your notes. And these questions are questions that will also guide that I want you to be able to answer. Okay. We'll have a quiz on these. Okay. And we'll have those on next class. A short quiz based on these two sets of questions created by your previous students. Okay? So be able to answer the questions. Have them on your page someplace and you'll get a quiz by them. Also, continue to either review or watch in 10-minute segments and take notes of The Secret of Oz and, of course, Money as Debt. All right? Including your vocabulary, fiat money. Okay, including your vocabulary, the notion, not vocabulary, what you know about, we covered Mansa Musa today. We covered the Song Dynasty, okay, in terms of paper money. All right, so the things that we cover, please review them, have them in your notes. That's what you're going to be tested on. All right, so as we move down the road. All right, Abdullah, I assume that you have your, you're ready to put your link up at some point. All right, well, we're getting ready to go right now. I thank you, everybody, for this class. I appreciate your participation and your attentiveness, your reviewing the material before and going through it and speaking what you think and believe. Again, make sure you keep track of the historical references. Make sure you keep in this class. Also, we covered universalism, the syntax of oppression. You got to be responsible for that. So, good, Abdullah, glad, you know, Nima, and, well, Abdullah, get with Nima and Safia to review this class and what we covered. I will also make the audio of it available, you know, to you, so you can download the MP3 and listen to the whole thing, and at the same time, you also can talk to them, there. All right, folks, I appreciate it. Any appreciations you want to share, you can do it now, and we can be gone.
I appreciate Balkasa for teaching the class and Sophia for participating.
I appreciate Balkasa for teaching the class, and I appreciate Nina for participating.
All right, it's a wrap. I appreciate both of you. Appreciate, love you. Take care. Brother Balagoon should be on tap for the afternoon. If perchance, because he's getting used to the new schedule, he is late, please, you know the work you got to do. Make it happen.